guys, party players. This is the Dominion League Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Trumpf, and I am once again joined by a mystery co-host.
Hello.
It's like the audio equivalent to like the glasses and the mustache.
Hello.
Hello.
This is the episode for August 12th, 2024. What else goes in the intro? I think that's it.
Well, it's like the second week of the league season, I guess.
Yes. Well, this is now the third. Like we started the third week of the league season.
And something happened recently in the world of Dominion as well.
What? No way.
Yeah.
I was a little hesitant about doing this episode because I felt like maybe people have heard us talk about Dominion enough this past week.
I don't think that's possible.
They had one day of respite.
One day? I think they've had 2 days.
Oh, was it? Oh, right. Oh, Friday.
Because it dropped on Friday, the rule book. Yeah, so the new thing that happened...
So 2 days of respite.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, sorry. What?
The new thing that happened, Rising Sun came out.
It's true.
If you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you didn't know that already, so...
Yeah, there you go. PSA.
Yeah.
And while we were talking about Rising Sun, one thing, now that I have played with a couple of the cards... One thing that I found interesting was that while we were doing the previews, I didn't realize how much trashing is a theme of this this expansion. So just wanted to add that. It's been very fun, but also very overwhelming.
Yeah, I haven't played that much with it yet, but we'll be playing a league match tomorrow, so.
Wah! All right. Let's look at standings. I think only one match was played in a division since last we talked, which is Mixinac played against Bitter Worm Coil and won 4-2. I don't think they played with Rising Sun, which I think makes sense because that... Mick would probably have had an advantage there as a playtester.
Which is one of the reasons the rules allow you to opt out of using new expansions like that.
Are you going to use it? Are you going to play with?
I don't think anybody in my division is a playtester. So, yeah. Sure. Why not?
Ooh. All right. B1, what's up? Play some games. Not okay. B2.
I think there actually haven't been any matches since last time. I think people may have been waiting through this week to play with Rising Sun, actually. Which might be a reason that we're a little light on matches for the past week.
Yeah, so Firkoal remains at the top of B2 division after two matches. And then in C1, Brepard is now in the lead with 67% wins after two matches.
And C2, Xerix is in the lead, having just played Knave. I think this includes that result. Yeah, having just beaten Knave 4-2. And I assume they did play with Rising Sun. And Xerix has played 3 matches, which is the most matches of anyone in A, B, or C tier. So good job, Xerix.
Well done. And it looks like, apart from Xerix, it looks like it's a close division.
Yeah.
So that's going to be... That's going to be interesting regarding the demotions.
So then C3, we've got favorite mod, Bobby DJ 18
Robert,
in the lead.
Robert Disc Jockey Robert. 1918.
Yes, yes.
Yep, in the lead. And in C4, we have someone that I am not familiar with named Communal.
Communal?
In the lead, Communal. With 71% win, so very strong start into the season. Let's see.
Their first league
season.
Yeah,
that's what I thought, because I wasn't familiar with them. So very strong start into league, and very strong start into their first league season.
Yeah, they just played Lemon Spawn today, so they probably played with Rising Sun as well.
Very fun. Very fun. Yeah, so... over in D tier, Will Wong has started into the season, and shot right to the top, but everyone, well, okay, Eichel has played 2 matches, but, everyone else, only 1 match. Amazing.
Amazing.
Yes.
D2, Scumpy was in the lead last time with the 10-2 in 2 matches, but, Alibi has now tied them with a 5-1 in 1 match. I mean, for practical purposes, I would still consider Scumpy to be in the lead, because it's hard to get another 5-1 to then still be tied after another match, but you never know.
Mm-hmm. And in D3, Birds of Siberia, another player who has played 3 matches so far, and they are in provisional lead, but everyone has... Yeah?
Yeah, well, they all have a 50% win rate. I'm not actually sure why the site is showing them as promoting. I think it's just alphabetical.
But usually...
Maybe it is giving credit for having played more matches, but I don't...
I think it is, because this should also be alphabetic, right? And it's not.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I think it's giving credit to the matches.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's weird, because it shows Scumpy and Alibi is tied. Like, they're both highlighted, right? But for D3, it shows Birds of Siberia with the brighter color.
That is true.
And I'm wondering why that is. Actually, can you hover over there? Like, maybe there's... Nah, those are all... I don't know. That's strange.
All right. And then in D4, we have someone who has already completed their season after 2 weeks. Shout out to Da Mark.
Who maybe really didn't want to play with Rising Sun.
Yeah, maybe. That could be a good incentive. But then, I mean, it's good on them to get, like, a very cooperative division.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not... I don't know if it's not likely, but it's definitely not often, I would say. Although in the lower tiers, you get people who, like, finish their season super quick.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. Like, I would say, yeah, in the upper tiers, the pacing tends to be more consistent. In the lower tiers, you have the divisions where everybody finishes really fast, or at least most players do. And then you also have the divisions where, like, nobody plays any matches, like, for the longest time, it seems like. Or, like, there's, like, 1 player playing matches or something. And then you're just, like, desperately trying to get... people to play matches as a mod.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So here, Beastbar 29 is currently in the lead with 67% wins in 2, closely followed by Chestic and the Extrategist with just 1 win, 1 fewer win.
Mm-hmm.
So also might turn out to be a close season between these three.
And then we've got E1, just 1 match has been played. All STDFT, I'm not really sure if that means anything, is in the lead with a 3.5 to 2.5 win over Kriesta or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only match that has been played in the division. So, yeah, not quite B1 levels of behind, but...
But get your games on.
Yeah.
And then in E2, Scravian made their season debut very strong with a clean sweep. 6-0 and is therefore at the top of the leaderboard right now.
Yeah. And in E3, we have Micah 1980, aka Micha 1980, tied with Tufte in the lead with 67%. Another case where, like, Micah 1980 has two matches and Tufte just one.
Yeah, and Tufte. I was going to say, Tufte is usually playing in D.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, they have a little bit more in C than in D.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
They've also been in B a couple times.
Yeah. So noticeable that Tufte is playing in E this division. We don't expect them to stay, although E is single promo.
Yeah. They do have 9 seasons in E. It's like, funny. This is like, I don't know. This is a good illustration of how I feel like maybe I'm the weird one. Because, like, I have, like, this is my first season in B. Tufte has played 3 seasons in B and has, like, a slightly better C to D ratio than I do, I think. But, like, they've played way more in E than I have. So, not, like, a ton, but still. It's like, I just don't move around as much as they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mako's forecast has Tufte as the projected winner.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, by a substantial margin.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. E4, we have Dim 886 and Alex Stein backwards, tied at the lead after one match.
And then E5, so those were both 5-1s. E5's leader is also at 5-1. That would be Mazel Tov.
Mazel.
And on E6, we have McUfly leading with a 4-2 victory in their only match.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Mama 5 already has 4 matches played.
Yeah.
And is at 50% right now.
Getting it done.
Mm-hmm. Fear of Rising Sun.
Right.
Potentially. And then in E7, finally, we have another tie at the lead after 2 matches each, Cross JJ and Velcia Omod 2. Both with 7 wins after 2 matches. All right, so much for the standings after these 2 weeks, 2 very eventful weeks.
Yeah.
I have not collected any results comments. I don't expect you to have done, no.
No. I mean, I expect we'll see more interesting stuff once people have had more time to play with Rising Sun. I also, like, expect, I do think that there's been, like, something of a lull in matches because of that. Like, people have been paying, like, obviously there's been a lot of activity around, you know, checking out the previews and all that good stuff. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a Rising Sun One Day tournament this past weekend, but we have not played. At least I haven't played. I don't know if you've played.
No.
Maybe. Well, I was asleep. You're like, ooh, and now is the time.
No.
I don't. I haven't even checked, I don't know, anything about it. Like, the channel or whatever. I don't know who won those 2 installments.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
No, I haven't. I haven't looked into it. Okay. But, yeah, there has been talk about having, you know, some other kind of or more long-form tournament. But nothing, I don't think anything has really settled out yet.
No, yeah. I think Donald X is ready. Like, Donald X has, like, some kingdoms ready and the mix ready.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it always depends on people's availability to host the tournament.
Right. I would kind of expect and hope that there will be, like, a release tournament that is structured more similar to the other release tournaments that isn't a mixed tournament, and then there will additionally be the mixed tournament sometime after that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we'll have to see what people actually want to run.
Yeah. And that brings us to our personal weekend games. I can start.
Yeah, go ahead.
I played my second match and tied and had somewhat of a meltdown because I felt like I was playing really badly. And so nothing new. yeah, I'm fine now, maybe. I will play my next match on Wednesday, and yeah, it depends on whether or not my opponent is willing to do this, but I would definitely be down to play with Rising Sun. Yeah.
Well, and you've played a whole bunch of games against the Rat of Rising Sun, right?
Yeah, I mean, I always play lots of games against the Rat.
Right, but this is different. It's Rising Sun cards.
yeah, sure. But, like, I don't know. That's just because there's a new expansion. It's not...
Well, but you're forcing those cards into the kingdoms, right?
Sometimes, yeah. Because, like, if you have the... Well, if you have the extras on, then maybe... Like, obviously, I wanted to play with Divine Wind a lot, so I, like, had to force that in. But... Yeah, I don't know. It's nothing out of the ordinary for me.
Mm-hmm.
My Dominion consumption.
Yeah. Well, it is out of the ordinary for me, but I did play some games against the Rat as well. For whatever reason, I would say Kitsune was the card that I ran into the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't played any more league matches. I will be tomorrow. And I haven't played any ladder games. I will at some point, but right now I've been busy with other things. Can't imagine what.
What?
I did watch our illustrious host's league match that she referenced, and she did not, in fact, play badly. So I just wanted to point that out. And yeah, I'm trying to think just if I had any takeaways from my initial forays into playing with some of the Rising Sun cards.
How do you feel about Tanuki?
I mean, it has great art. I think, like, so the community consensus right now seems to be that Tanuki is crazy strong. I guess I'm not sure that I follow that just yet. Like, it seems good, but not, like, I don't know. There's some people saying, like, oh, it's way better than Butcher. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Like, that's a pretty strong statement.
Is that just because, like, it's a shadow card?
Yeah, yeah. Which is a big deal, but, I haven't played with it much, but it still has, like, a lot of the limitations that Vanilla Remodel has, where, like, it's not good at trashing coppers most of the time. And you can end up, like, not really having a lot for it to do in the mid-game, where you trashed all your estates, and now you just, like, need stuff to feed it, and sometimes you just don't have stuff to feed it, and... You know, people have been talking about it, like, oh, you could, like, really rush down provinces because you know you're going to see it every time. You're going to be able to pair it with the right card. I don't know how relevant of a play pattern that will be. I mean, if it is one, then that changes, like, the whole mid-game thing a little bit, because if you're trying to, like, rush to province and then just mill provinces, then I guess maybe you kind of skip that part of the game. But, yeah, I mean, having a remodel that is... like, slower to come online, but, like, ultimately, like, more consistent and reliable and flexible in terms of how you play it. Like, that's certainly good. I just don't know that I think... It does not have the flexibility that Butcher does to, like, be like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, build up these extra coffers, and then I'm gonna turn my copper into a 5, or my estate into a 5, or, you know, my, like, 3 into a province or whatever. Like, I do think that is, like, a big... I just don't overlook that when you're evaluating Butcher. I guess. Yeah, I actually, when I played with Change, like, the Change could do that stuff, right? Like, I mean, not all of it, because change can't mill provinces, but it's like you need a way to pay off the debt every time you do this. So in that sense, it's like going to be harder to do than with Butcher. Plus, like, Butcher effectively generates 2 money when it's doing that, and Change doesn't. But Change is only a 4, and you can open with it. And, like, having some virtual coins that you can use to pay off the debt means you can, like, spend multiple changes to do, like, your remodeling, which is cool. So, yeah, I thought that was nice. Obviously, it's not a shadow card, but
mm-hmm.
I think Ronin was a card that we maybe... underrated a little bit.
You are very critical of Ronin. I gotta say, or not very critical, but you were like, oh, I don't think this is good. And Ronin is definitely, from the cards that I have played with, I'm not sure. I've played with a bunch of the cards. I don't know if I've played with all of them yet. Certainly not all of the prophecies, but obviously that's more difficult. I will say Ronin has been one of my favorites so far. It's definitely, it depends on, like, if it's good or not, definitely also depends on, like, what else is in the kingdom, but so far, that has been my favorite shadow card, I would say. Like, Ninja obviously is Ninja, but I kind of feel like Ronin has had more value so far for me, and I guess, like, my other favorite card, I would say, of the set so far is Aristocrat, even though it's not, like... I just think it's fun. Like, I know, like, it's not... it's, like, difficult to, like, really pay off well. But I do like the mechanic a lot of this, like, just... It reminds me of the... What was that in Warcraft? When you, like, click on the sheep and then at some point they explode. It's like you just...
What?
I don't know why that's like the association in my head, but it's like Aristocrat, you just like click on it enough and you go around and it's like actions and now cards and now money and now buy and now like from the top. And I don't know, I think it's just funny. I have a lot of fun with it.
Okay, well, as far as Ronin is concerned, I think the thing that I maybe was undervaluing with Ronin is how it can fit into a deck that is not using draw to X as its like primary mode of operation. I still think like draw to X as a paradigm is just not something you can do all that often. It needs a lot of support, and Ronin doesn't really change that. But what it does mean is that if you have like, you know, enough stuff in the deck to make a single like draw to X play work to your benefit, like then you can get good value out of it, because you can always make sure that it happens with the right timing. Like that you know, it's like the point in your turn where you happen to draw the cards that decrease hand size, where you draw your remodel or whatever, like then you can follow that up with draw to X. The closest comparison I could give to that is to like some kingdoms with Blacksmith, where because Blacksmith can cantrip, like you don't have to treat it as a draw to X card, so you can shove Blacksmiths in your deck, and then like it's okay. I mean, it's not great, but it's okay if only one of them can actually use the draw to X mode, because the other ones aren't like hurting your turn. And that's not necessarily that powerful, because like shoving a bunch of Blacksmiths into your deck isn't like that don't do anything isn't particularly good.
Yeah.
But in this case, like it's similar in that like you can get value out of just the one play, but you don't need a whole bunch of them to do it. Like with Blacksmith, you need a bunch of them because you need to be able to find it at the right time. You don't have that problem with Ronin, obviously. So I think mm-hmm. that's the situation where it really is going to be most impactful, is when you have like one or maybe two of them and you're not really using it to draw your whole deck. You're just using it to like do some like light draw to X, and then once you've increased your hand size, it's like, okay, I need regular draw, and that's fine. So yeah, that's mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of the stuff that I haven't really played with at all. I did get to play with Bureaucracy, and I did actually pick up second moneylender, so as anticipated.
Yeah, I played with Harsh Winter, and it was harsh. was a lot of debt suddenly everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially, I think it was like Harsh Winter Gather. And so it was like pop, pop, pop everywhere.
Didn't you have like a Harsh Winter tax board?
Yeah.
How did that work out?
I don't remember.
That seems like it could produce some shenanigans, but it's not like off the top of my head, I can't really like visualize what those shenanigans would be.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult against the Lord of Rattington because like obviously he's not going to activate prophecies or anything.
Yeah, and he's not going to buy the cards with debt on them either.
Yeah.
Well, that's not entirely true.
No, it depends on what card it is.
What was it? There was some board where it was just like, we'll just tax gold because they're raveled by gold.
Yeah. I am very familiar with the Lord's habits. Anywho, any other thoughts?
No, I think we'd... I mean, this isn't meant to be a Rising Sun analysis podcast, so I think we can move on.
Well, that means moving on means spec chat. Would you like to start?
What other than continuing with the mole, what have I seen or, like, consumed?
That is not Dominion-related.
Not Dominion-related. Yeah. I mean, YouTube videos, mostly, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, like, what...
You've seen John's.
I've seen John's. John's is not a piece of media.
Why not? John's is text.
We saw those sand castles.
It's true.
I don't know if that really... Or not sand castles, sand sculptures.
Sand sculptures.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if that counts as a piece of media exactly, but it was pretty cool. There's a... Like an event near here where there's... Like they have an annual sand sculpting contest at Revere Beach. And the... Like we basically just went to the beach just because...
Because I wanted to see the ocean.
Yeah. But the point is, it wasn't because we were going to see these sand sculptures. But they happened to be there, so we checked them out. And, they were pretty impressive. Like, some of them were almost, like, disturbingly detailed.
Yeah.
You might say.
Like, yeah, for sure.
This doesn't seem like it should be possible.
With sand, yeah.
Yeah. And they use some kind of, like, special thing in the sand to make it, like, stickier, clumpier, whatever, so that it holds together better. So, like, even though the things had been there for a while and had rained, like, they were mostly intact. There were a few places where things had, like, broken off or whatever, but basically things were intact. What did you think the coolest one was?
Oh, I don't remember a lot of them. Okay, I remember some, but of the ones that I remember, I don't really know. I don't especially liked a lot of them, I don't think.
I know you didn't like the one with, like, there's, like, a jester, like, throwing dice down a ramp. You didn't like that
one. No. No, it was mostly, like, I was impressed by the craftsmanship.
Yeah.
But I didn't particularly enjoy it, like, from an aesthetical point of view, I don't think.
Yeah. Like you said, it was more about the craftsmanship, but let's see, what was there was like the cat burglar one,
mm-hmm.
which was a pretty interesting, because it was like it's almost like a pop out, like relief
mm-hmm.
sculpture thing. It's really hard to describe. It had multiple different like unrelated cats. It was like one of those Chinese like clock cats, and then there was like Felix the cat, mm-hmm. and then there was an actual burglar who was the cat burglar because he was stealing the cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was the one with the Japanese kind of one with all the different pieces of paper.
Yeah, the one with all the like, what are those things called? Would think we would know after this new set comes out with all of its... the talisman, the paper talismans.
Mm.
all over the place. Yeah, that was really impressive because, like, the level of detail on that was, like, they all had, like, the characters etched in them and stuff.
Yeah. That was the one with the house and the storm that where you thought
The one where I started singing The Wizard of Oz. Mm. Like the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I don't even know. I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
It's like they have like the theme, they have like the different themes, and it's like the, at least I think that's what they play like when they're, when there's like they have like the scene where the tornado like picks up the house and like deposits it in Oz. Maybe I'm actually wrong. It's been ages since I've seen that movie, but. But yeah, it was a house with like this. It wasn't exactly like a tornado, like that was what it kind of evoked to me. But it was like, it was almost like a solid piece of wind like coming through like one side of the house and then winding through it, and then out the other, like through the windows.
And there were birds everywhere, like sparrows.
Maybe? Yeah. That was like a very impressive, like kind of three dimensionality to that one. I mean, there are a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like. At least, I don't know, at least a dozen.
Yeah.
Probably more.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yes. So I had sort of like two competing things going on last week, one of which was the Rising Sun previews, and the other one was the Olympics. Because sport climbing was now the second time that sport climbing was represented at the Olympics, and since it's such a young discipline, there's still the formatting is still somewhat in question. So the last time all the three disciplines that comprise sport climbing are like professional sport climbing, which is speed climbing, lead climbing, and bouldering, were combined into one single format, which is, as you may imagine, terrible and should not be done. And so this time around, speed climbing was separate and boulder and lead climbing are still combined. But obviously we hope for all the three disciplines to have their own separate competitions at some point in the future with the Olympics. But nevertheless, it was an incredibly fun competition, and obviously there was a lot of ramp up this past year with different continental competitions and then qualifier events for the athletes to gain the tickets to the Olympics. And I had a lot of fun watching. I will say the women's competition was, I don't want to say it was better, but it definitely was more gripping, I feel like, because there were just so many athletes that I was rooting for, and also in the finale. And the finale was just, I felt like, such a triumph for the root setters, because if, like, okay, so for now, this is the format, right, that the Olympics has. You have this combination of boulder and lead. And while they are pretty similar as disciplines, they are also pretty distinct in many different ways. And I felt like with the women's final in particular, the root setters definitely, I felt like they were able to really emphasize what the distinct strengths of each discipline really was, where like the boulder was, it was a lot about dynamics. And I know that is a trend right now, and maybe that will change in the future, but you had that a lot. And then in the lead, it was so much about endurance, and it just felt like a classic lead route. And I thought that was brilliantly done. And yeah, I was just sort of like very impressed by the root setting, and then it was just such a joy. I mean, like, I don't know, it was all very emotional. The athletes were very emotional, and I was very emotional, and it was just such talent on display, and yeah, such amazing athletes that yeah, I was just very, very happy with how that all went down and super impressed by the athletes and, yeah, very hopeful for the future of the sport that's very, very dear to me.
And for those of you who don't know, such as me of a couple of years ago, or may only be vaguely aware, bouldering is the sport where you, like, have a relatively small, like, wall, and you climb up without any kind of, like, harness or, like, other, like, aids. It's just, like, you and these handholds, and you try to, like, get, you know, to the top, and then there's, it's like a relatively short amount of time that this takes if you succeed in it, but you have multiple attempts to try to make it up within like a longer, like, total time window. So, like, you basically have, it's like, it depends, I think it depends on the competition, but, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes, like, to try to ascend the boulder.
Yeah. It's different between semifinals and finals.
Yeah. But like, you can try as many times as you want within that window, although it's better to get it, like, in fewer attempts at, from a tiebreaker perspective. Whereas lead is the one who's, like, maybe the more, like, I don't know if you would say traditional exactly, but, like, you know, yeah, method of climbing where you have a harness and ropes, and there are, like, attachment points for the rope as you go up the wall. So you hook the ropes into the wall as you go up so that, like, you can actually go higher or up than it would be safe to fall from. Yes. Unlike boulder, where, like, you have to, like, you can't go any higher than it is safe for you to just free fall from. But, like, with lead, you can go higher than that because the ropes will catch you and you will, like, descend, you know, very safely with, like, the ropes attached to the harness.
Yeah. And, of course, like, with this new Olympic format and the one from the 3 years ago, it does change kind of the, like, the trajectory of this contemporary or, like, this current crop of athletes, because they are forced, because that is the format of the Olympics, they are forced to do multiple disciplines, right? Where it is kind of common to do both of these together as, like, professional athletes, boulder and lead, but it used to be, and there are still many athletes who are just specialists in one discipline. And so it is an interesting point in time. I don't know how long it will take for boulder and lead to get their separate competitions at the Olympics. But it is an interesting point in time where athletes are kind of forced to do both if they want to compete in this, like, I don't know, highest of sports competitions. Mm-hmm. They are forced more into, like, doing both. And that's still impressive, right? The top of the top right now, they can just do both. And even though you still have people who are more of a boulder specialist and people who are more of elite specialists, you do get people who just are really good at these both disciplines that kind of have a lot of overlap, but then also not. And I'm looking forward to having the disciplines be separate again and then seeing people, like, really, really excel in, like, the single disciplines again. And mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, see how that changes the trends and route setting again.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, what I would, like, compare it to in terms of if you were to take, like, other events and say, like, these are, like, together now. I mean, obviously there are events like biathlon and triathlon and pentathlon and decathlon, but like, those are almost all broken, or, like, can be broken down into individual events that can also be competed in separately. Maybe not every single one of them, but most of them. Like, but if you were to just say, like, oh, you can only, it's like, you know, anybody who runs the 100 meters also has to run, like, the 1600 meters or something like that, mm-hmm. right? It'd be, like, kind of like the equivalent of that, where it'd be like, well, that's,
mm-hmm.
huh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not. Maybe they're more similar than running those two races is, but maybe not. I'm not really sure how you would evaluate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it was definitely a great moment for my favorite sport. So I really enjoyed watching that. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for tuning in. You can find me on Discord for feedback. I am at Strumpf. Also, if you have feedback about my co-host or for my co-host, you can direct that to me. And we will see you all next time.
The game has ended. Goodbye.